Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation, on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I call your name, the echo is haunting, the echo is always the same. I call your name, the echo is haunting, an echo can never be changed. So I call your name.
Welcome to the gathering on Signs of Life Radio. I'm Bob Ginsberg, and I'm with, as usual, Tom and Melissa Gould. This is the show where we address your questions, your personal experiences, questions about the afterlife and related issues. Some of you have emailed in your experiences, but if you had a personal experience, you're just curious about something and you want us to address it, we'd love to hear from you. The number here is 888-627-6008. Hello, team. How are you?
All right, Bob.
Hey, Bob.
So before we get started, I wanted to ask your opinion on this. You know, we probably all of us have mediums that are in our personal Facebook friends. And I know FFF also has an official Facebook page. And every once in a while, I see, you know, mediums posting, and I never know whether they're joking or whether they're serious, but they refer to themselves as witches, you know, my witchy friends and, you know, my witch group and, you know, whatever. So on the one hand, you know, I'm thinking about that, and some people might take that the wrong way. I mean, I can understand, you know, that witches deal with the supernatural, and this is over and above the natural with what mediums do. But on the other hand, you know, witches are associated, you know, with magical powers. But unfortunately, a lot of people think that it's also evil witches, you know.
Yeah.
And some even have associate witches, you know, with religious, you know, beliefs and so forth. So you have an opinion on that? I mean, is that something that you understand mediums referring to themselves as witches? You think it's just in jest, or
I kind of think it's more like
a sisterhood thing.
I was stopped because I thought, do we have any of our male mediums joining in that chatter? And I don't think so. I think it might be more like a fun way to refer to the sisterhood of.
Yeah, I sort of feel. I mean, It, as you say, it may have be a pejorative term for a lot of people, and they don't cast spells, so they're sort of co-opting something that really is not in their realm. But again, you know, if you have a group of friends who want to call themselves whatever they want to call themselves,
but they also may practice. It doesn't have to be a negative thing, you know.
Well, it depends on if you're north, south, east, or west, I guess.
Right. Well, the good witch of the east and the witch of the north or whatever.
Yeah. That's an interesting thing to think about, though. Maybe we'll have to ask them.
Yeah. Next time we'll have to bring it up at one of the retreats. Like, just we'll have to ask them what their thoughts are. Some people have written in, and somewhere in here, I have my chat, so we'll open up that window. Here we have a comment. Right before going to bed, I had a complete meltdown. I couldn't read or do anything. As I was falling asleep with just a sheet over me, I could see my deceased husband's face. When I woke, the room was freezing, but I was covered with our quilt. Could my husband have moved the quilt, or am I losing it? You know, thank you for all your time. I guess this could be both, you know. I mean, on one hand, I could say lots of times our temperature runs hot and cold in bed, and we throw our sheets off or a blanket off, and then we're not even conscious of it, as we'll grab it when it gets cold and cover ourselves. On the other hand, she saw her deceased husband's face.
Yeah.
You know? So it seems to be that he was visiting, and sure, he could have covered her, you know, to keep her. So
I like to think of it like that. Yeah.
And I read the freezing cold to be, it's not usually that way, that this was another unusual occurrence.
Yeah. Well, we have I think there was another question that came in about the temperature changes, but so I guess we'll get to that. But yeah, I mean, ordinarily, if she hadn't seen her husband's face through the sheets, I would say, well, that's just, you know, her subconsciously covering herself. But when you put the two and two together, it seems to make sense that she had a visitation.
I know there's plenty of things that I do that later on I go, I don't remember doing that. So.
Right. Well, I find that happens more often every day as I get older.
Exactly. Yes.
But, you know, people often, and we talk about it a lot, you know, the signs that they get involves coins, you know. So this is kind of long, but this person wrote, I lost my son 2 years ago, suddenly and very unexpectedly. I've never spoken to anyone ever, and I hold my grief very personal and close. I'm afraid to share for a few reasons. One being that if I let it out, that I will lose my mind literally. I will not be able to come back to a reality as it is. That's interesting. The last place I saw my son was at the airport where he lived at the time. I promised him I would make sure his daughters never forgot him or the rest of the family. He was divorced and was only allowed to visit with his girls when she allowed. Long story, she said. So needless to say that I cry every time I fly to visit my granddaughters because of it being the last place I hugged and kissed my son. Not long after my son passed, his grandmother passed. I asked all the time for my son to give me signs that he's okay, but like a lot of us do, I don't want to believe it when I get him. That, you know, I question whether it's from him or not. After his grandmother passed, I asked for a sign from her to let me know he was okay. I asked her to send me a dime, not a penny or anything else, but it had to be a dime. I went to visit my granddaughters and was at the airport, the one I hate being at because it makes me cry. I was waiting to board my flight and wanted to just get on the plane and come home. The flight got delayed and I thought about going to get a coffee earlier, but talked myself out of going. So when the flight got delayed, I said, I'm going to get that coffee. Trying to keep myself occupied, I got up, started walking to the shop, and in the middle of the huge aisle that everyone walks to and from the gates, I happened to look down, and right there at my feet was a dime. And she attached a picture of it, you could see it was sort of like a marbled camouflaged floor, so it was hard to see. But in the photo, you see it clearly. So of course, I just started crying as I reached for the sign from my son's grandmother. Not only did she send me the dime, I asked her to send me, it was in the airport terminal where I last saw my son. There was no talking myself out of thinking where and who this was from. I believe 100% that she was telling me, yes, she is with my son and he's okay. Here we had somebody that refused to accept, you know, a lot of things, and now she got the very thing that she needed to convince her, right? And so,
I was about to applaud her for taking a photo of it rather than feeling the need to pick it up. But then she added that she reached for the dime, because we've told folks, you know, it's the seeing it that is what is important, and acknowledging the sign that you know. With germs and things these days, you never know. But I'm so happy that she recognized it and that she is discerning, not just taking everything as a sign, but waited for what she had actually requested.
Yeah. I think that the first thing that you said, maybe you can talk about that, Melissa. She's never spoken to anyone, and she holds in her grief. Right. And the reason that she gave for that is that she thought that if she would let it out, as she says, that she would lose her mind, literally. Is that something that
I don't hear that very I don't recall ever.
Continue, because she said something about the reality. So
she said, I will not be able to come back to reality as it is.
Yeah, that's interesting as well. That yeah.
Because I would see it more that she would, once, you know, you start talking about it, the floodgates open, and then you don't feel like you can compose yourself again. But that's not what she said.
Yeah. No, you know, I'm sorry, Tom, you were going to say something?
No, my recommendation from what I've heard, and certainly what I've heard from Dr. Mo, Hannah, that you got to let it out. You know, you feel it until you don't feel it anymore. And I understand that there's now the concern is, well, if I let my grief go, then I'm also letting my loved one go. And they're not joined in that way. Your grief is because you love them. You're never going to stop loving them. So you will always have that missing, I miss them, I wish you were here kind of thing. But you want to let go of the debilitating pain that is impeding you living the rest of your life as fully as you can. So there's a lot in that sentence.
There is, and I don't think that she was specifically talking about this, but what I thought of is about, like, when people get into an altered state of consciousness, you know, into another reality and let go into that, you know, sometimes there's a fear of not being able to, you know, to come back to the way that you were. I mean, I experienced that back in my college days, you know, by, you know, taking certain substances, and I would have, as soon as I started to lose control instead of going with it, I would start to panic, you know, because, well, what if I don't come back to the person that I was, you know? So there are some, you know, so I don't think that that's what she's talking about. But listen, the world that we're always talking about, this unseen world, is another reality. You know, however you get there, it is letting yourself go, you know, as Tom said, letting yourself go. So I guess that could be a fear for some people as well.
I hope this contributor will share more in the future. You know, maybe hear this and clarify it for us.
I would love to have her give us an update in a couple of months and seeing how she's feeling, if she's still holding on to that belief that she's got right now.
Well, maybe this was the turning point, you know, where she won't anymore. This was in from people that we know, a person we know at the foundation, Liz D. She said, my mom passed February of 2018. I believe she made her presence known to me on the first Christmas after she died. I was composing a text on my iPhone and selecting holiday pictures to forward to my aunt, my mother's sister. When the icon of my mother's phone appeared as an AirDrop option on my phone, if you're unfamiliar with the AirDrop option, it's a way of sending data from one Apple device to another, but they must be on the same physical Wi-Fi network. The devices also must be geographically close, usually in the same room or in the same household. The only Apple device my mother owned was an older iPad, which was at that point in Massachusetts, a completely different state from where I live. That iPad had no cell phone abilities, and it certainly was not on the same network. As soon as I saw the pink flower icon with her name appear, it quickly disappeared, but I had such a surprised reaction that my husband ran over to me to see what was on my screen. The icon reappeared long enough for him to see it and for me to quickly snap a screenshot of it, and then we both watched it as it slowly disappeared. And the screenshot had a date and time on it, which was after, you know, her mom had passed. So it was actually 10 months after her passing. So to this day, I've never seen it appear again, but the fact that this happened even once has given me great comfort knowing her presence still surrounds me. And she attached a copy of that snapshot. So there's, we're always talking about personal proof, right? There it is.
And my first impression is, wow, Liz is very tech savvy.
Yeah.
I'm going to capture all that.
Well, Yeah, we love that because you. What do we tell people? First, rule out the physical explanation.
Yeah.
Which he did quite well, right? So yes. Rule out the physical, what's left, right?
Yeah. I think that's funny that you for these devices, you have to be physically close, but across
the veil
across to another universe, yeah, then that's no problem.
Well, they always say that we always say that they're still in the same room with you. So
yeah.
Well, there's another bit of evidence to that being true.
I love that.
This is The Gathering. For those who's joining us, if you want to share an experience or you have a question, you can give us a call at 888-627-6008. Some questions that came in, a lot about mediums. How does a medium know if the information that they're giving us is coming from their own mind as opposed to coming from spirit? Well,
you mean when you say their own mind, the sitter's mind, like they're reading mind, or that the medium is getting it into their mind?
She's saying referring to the mediums coming from their mind. So they get a piece of information. So how does the medium know that they're not making it up versus they're getting it from spirit?
Well, certainly we've gotten, we talk to a lot of mediums about, we talk to every medium about the difference between mediumistic readings and psychic readings. And they can tell the difference whether the information is coming from the sitter's aura around them, which would be a psychic thing, or if they're getting it from a discarnate. So it feels different, number one. And number two, a good medium will tell you things that only you and the deceased know, that they couldn't possibly have Googled it or looked it up or known anything about it. They will bring up information that they couldn't have known. So it isn't coming from their minds.
I recall, you're making me think of the time I took my skeptical mom and sister, even though I've let people know, I was raised by my mother to believe in all this. But I think as she got older, she started to question everything. And at this particular reading, which they knew what Tom and I had been involved with, and I thought, let me give you a little experience of your own. And at one, and the two gals, I could hear them from the other room, poo-pooing everything that I recognized as evidence. And near the end of the reading, the medium suddenly said, "And Kevin, who's Kevin?" And I'm in the other room listening, and I know Kevin is the name of the fellow my daughter had recently started dating. And I heard my mother say, "Well, we don't know any Kevin." And I'm all excited in the other room because the medium's going, "Well, he's telling me," and that he was an older gentleman who had been bringing forth the information throughout the reading. So at the end of it, when my mom and sister and I were leaving and getting in the car, I told them, she mentioned Kevin. That's who Marin's dating. And my mother said, "Oh, she's just reading your mind." And I wasn't even in on the reading. But in this case, my mother said, "Who's telling you this?" So it wasn't as though the medium was getting it psychically. She named the spirit that had been delivering other information.
And she also said in the reading, she's saying love and marriage, love and marriage. And they had just started dating, but 2 years later, they did get married. So how was that reading anybody's mind?
Yeah, and that's something, that's a common argument that skeptics use. You know, all mediums are just reading the mind. But of course, when they're giving you information that the sitter does not know. I mean, how is that reading their mind if they're unaware of it? It doesn't really work. You know, over the years, sometimes I've been surprised in talking to mediums, and they say that they struggled with that, even after they became professional mediums. They questioned themselves. They would say, yeah. Is it possible that this is just my own mind making this up, you know? So it's, I think it's a learning process, especially at the beginning. It is a problem that mediums face, right?
Well, it's also reminding me, Bob, there was a time years ago when I went with Fran and another friend to do a bit of mediumistic instruction. I forget what they even call it, a development session. And as we worked with this medium and the other people who were present, it was remarkable how subtle it is for the messages to come through. I don't feel like I have any special abilities, but with the help of the medium who was instructing all of us and asking certain questions, the information that came to me was then being identified by other people in the room. And I always expected it to be like a big wow, aha, kind of a moment, but it wasn't at all. It was just simply a thought, like say what you're thinking, say what's coming into your head. So I would pause and think about it. And this happened also at one of our grief retreats. I believe it was more of a development retreat. We weren't specific to grief on that weekend. But one of the mediums guiding the group was just leading us to say what we're hearing, what we're feeling, what we're sensing. And it was so remarkable how unremarkable it was.
Yeah, it's interesting. It is a subtle process. Let's go to a phone call. We have Bev from Houston. Hello, Bev.
Hi, Bob. Our son is terrific at giving us signs, and we recently went up to Banff, Canada. So he gave us a sign there and then also a sign when we came home. Right before the trip, we do jigsaw puzzles all the time, and we finished the puzzle and there was a piece missing. And that kind of drives us crazy, so we looked under the table, picked everything up, and just looked everywhere, could not find the puzzle piece anywhere, and finally gave up and decided that the cleaning lady who had been there that morning had vacuumed it up and it was gone. So we went to our trip, and when we got to our hotel, it was a 5-star hotel, and it had this moose on the wall, and there were dirty socks hanging on the wall. Something that's unusual to find in a hotel room, but like, yeah. Or something. And there were these wet, dirty socks hanging on the wall. But there was a pair of white socks, but then there was an unmatched one white sock, one black sock pair. And that's our son always wore one white sock, one black sock.
Wow.
Oh, my. We knew that he was with us, and we had a great trip and other good, slightly less remarkable signs, but always every day, always knew he was with us. But when we got home, we came into the house and looked at the puzzle, and there was the piece sitting right next to where it goes into the puzzle.
Wow.
I think, I think your son was messing with you last week, for sure.
I think so.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, how often do you find, like, wet socks hanging in a 5-star hotel in your hotel room, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, that's so remarkable, because obviously they come in and clean the rooms for them not to... So that's really remarkable. That's very evidential, I think.
He sounds like a jokester. Yeah.
Very inventive.
He really was. Yep, very much.
Thanks for sharing that.
All right, thank you.
Love it.
Uh-huh. Take care.
Bye-bye.
That's so cute.
Here's a question. So I believe that when we die, we go to a different dimension, which we call the afterlife. So assuming that there are many dimensions, we move on to the next one when we're ready. So can a medium only communicate with beings in a dimension where we go right after we die, or can they communicate across many dimensions? So I think I get that. So if we think that we advance from sphere to sphere in the afterlife, so let's say we're in a much higher sphere than when we started out from. We think of it in physical terms, we're being further away. But I guess if we think of it in terms of frequency, we're probably at a much higher frequency, which would make it more difficult for a medium to communicate. Maybe that explains why messages and signs seem to wane as our physical years go by, because they're advancing and we're not.
You know, I would agree with you on, and I was thinking the same thing, Bob, when people say to us, I got a lot of signs in the beginning, but I'm not anymore. And we've often, you know, shared our own thoughts about that, that you don't need them as much. Our loved ones want us to be living our lives, not just searching for the signs that they are around us, but to have trust and faith that they are because of what they've already shown us. However, then, how would we explain mediums who say let's hope all spirits do evolve, because I was going to say bringing forth a grandmother or, you know, some relative who died such a long time ago. But those I keep having new thoughts as I speak, because those are the ones I guess I'm thinking of where you could have some sort of proof, like you still have some object that belongs to them or a memory of something. And so if mediums can communicate with a loved one who's been gone for decades, we don't know then, do we, if the medium is able to advance, or maybe the spirit didn't move on that far. That would be a good question.
Yeah, I mean, some of what I've read seems to indicate that those at this much higher, you know, frequency and vibration in these more enlightened realms, they can step down to meet us, you know, and communicate, but it takes a lot of effort, and you know, and perhaps they can only do it for a certain amount of time. You know, it's sort of like a diver going down, you know, deep in the ocean. You know, he can do it for a while, but not for an extended period of time. So who knows?
You know, that also makes me think, when we talk about the higher realms in the books, the book we used to speak about, and now I'm drawing a blank.
Testimony of Light.
Yes, Testimony of Light. How, I mean, we all talk about having the life review, and you see the error of your ways, and in UK, though, maybe people are sort of blind to the errors that, and I call errors meaning the way they may have mistreated somebody. So maybe not all spirits do advance. You would hope that those in the higher realm would be there to reach out to them and help them, but some people might be pretty stubborn and, you know, stick to their guns. So I got off track, I'm sorry.
And also something to consider, I was listening to the radio today, and a professor was being interviewed, and a term came up, which I thought was just a fantasy thing used for comic books, but it's based in actual physics, the concept of a multiverse. If you're a fan of Marvel movies, the multiverse is everywhere in these movies, and characters are jumping from one to another. And I thought, well, that's a nice construct if you're making a comic book, but apparently it's based on an actual thing, that they're... It's not just here in the physical world and there in the afterlife, because there are there could be many, many different places you could go.
That's right. And yeah, it's based on real science. And you know, it's been a theory for a few decades now. So just think about that. Based upon these free will decisions that we make, we exist in, throughout the multiverse, and our lives are completely different there, you know. And we have, you know, things are completely changed. It's mind-boggling, but it's possible. This question, how can people in the afterlife remember their physical existence if they no longer have a brain? You know, it's a logical question, you know, but maybe the answer is that memories, or at least many memories, are not stored in the brain. You know, they're stored in a greater consciousness, you know, more on a soul level. So once we shed the body and we shed the brain, the memories are still there. It's part of us. It's part of our consciousness or soul. So how can they do a lot of things without a body? They just do them, right? It's just the power of thought. You know?
I know.
And when I heard that question, my answer was, how can you remember things in the physical if you don't have a brain? And I thought, fondly.
Right.
Your brain is what's holding you back.
Yeah.
That's true. You know, we don't often get, you know, comments like this, but, you know, I guess it's good that somebody wrote. She wrote, after losing our son, my husband will not accept any possibility that my son still exists. And I firmly believe that he does. This has caused major problems in our marriage. Do you have any suggestions in dealing with this? Well, not on a professional level, no. But we know that it's true. I mean, there's like an insanely high percentage of marriages fail after the loss of a child, and it is very common for one spouse to believe and the other spouse not to, and that causes all sorts of friction. So I guess the only suggestion is to try to meet halfway, right? I mean, what would you say, Melissa?
Well, it breaks my heart because we've witnessed this at some of our retreats, and it made me realize that for future retreats, I should not assume that all couples want to be in the same group together, because one without the belief might hold back the other from expressing themselves. And everybody's got their own grief journey, and this is his, unfortunately. I think, you know, therapy could possibly help, but not all therapists are even open to what we're talking about right now. So there has to be, you know, some way for the marriage to survive, for them to, you know, find a meeting place, or, you know, agree not to talk about it. But it sounds as though the one partner is going to be getting through the grief process more manageably, and they'll be behind, and it sometimes isn't salvageable.
Yeah, you know, I was somewhat lucky in the respect that, you know, after our daughter died, I didn't believe in the afterlife, and Fran obviously did, and was convinced of it. But instead of like shutting me out, you know, she became my lifeline, you know, because at least I was smart enough to remain open-minded about it. And so I was living vicariously, you know, through her experiences, you know, because I knew that they were true, and that she was just, you know, bringing me along and really saving me, because it really could have gone, you know, the other way. So if you're in a marriage like that and you suffer that kind of a loss, maybe the best thing is just try to not shut the other one out and remain open-minded, you know, and just see where that leads you. So
I know it leaves us thinking that one is willing to try a little harder than the other, but we can't question somebody's grief journey, you know, if they're locked into that way of thinking. I could only hope maybe you and Fran had some remarkable experiences that you were found undeniable. So hopefully for this couple, you know, there could be some wonderful phenomena that occurs.
Yeah, I hope so.
I can jump in here a little bit. One thing I want to say is my father was one of those people, did not believe in any of that sort of thing. And he was the first in our family to pass. And he came back. He's been an amazing communicator ever since. So that doesn't help you in your physical world. I also am reminded of a friend of ours who lost his wife. And we were hanging out with him, and we sort of mentioned, well, have you seen any signs? And immediately said, I don't believe in any of that. Oh, no, don't even talk to me about that. And so we didn't. And then as the evening progressed and we were talking, he started talking about getting a sign. He didn't call it a sign, but he was talking about something, and Melissa and I looked at each other and go, doesn't believe in signs, does he? You know? Oh. So I think my only advice in this situation, and again, not a professional in any way, is because certainly the person who does believe and thinks that they're getting a sign wants validation of that sign. And if your partner is shutting you down every time, that doesn't help your grieving process. So what I would suggest is stay away from the terminology, stay away from the saying signs or afterlife or anything like that, and just point out the coincidences. Oh, isn't that interesting? You know, we were just talking about him and we turned on the radio and there's his song. Little things like that, that without saying, oh, that must be him, that must be a sign, which will get the reaction she doesn't want. Just sort of mention that. Isn't that interesting? Or isn't that a coincidence? Rather than saying, oh, there's a sign, or this is the afterlife. And just hopefully there, over time, there'll be enough of them, or hopefully he will get an aha moment. But
that's excellent advice, because that word sign is used a lot. And I know in some grief groups I've heard people go, everyone's talking about their signs, I don't get any signs, but then shares a story that, you know, sort of indicates. So good.
That's excellent advice, Tom. And that's the way to go. And then, you know, and that's sort of the philosophy that we used at the foundation. I mean, we never tried to hit somebody over the head or try to convince them of something. We just share stuff that happened, and we encourage people to form their own opinions about it, right? So I'm totally on board with what you said, Tom. Here's an interesting question. Do you think that people become more afraid or less afraid of dying when they get older? There's a lot of reasons for both, you know? When you're young, you know, the thought of dying is terrifying because you have your whole life ahead of you. And after you've lived a longer life, you're more accepting and it's less threatening, you know. So, but then again, people are getting closer to that point when they get older, and that could be terrifying to them too. So I don't know what the right answer is, you know. I mean, personally, I could speak that as I get older, I'm not afraid of dying at all, where I was very much traumatized by that thought in my younger days. But
Well, I recall Tom's dad coming through a medium saying, well, it's not like I was afraid to die. I just didn't want it to hurt. And I know for us, a big factor is our belief system, because those think that's it. This is all there is. Sure. You know, that sounds awful.
Yeah, I have found certainly that, as you say, the belief, the knowing that there is more to come, and that, and from what I've heard from near-death experiences, it's an actually wonderful and beautiful thing to come. So I have no fear of going of that. And, you know, as I get older, I'm, in a way, I'm going to welcome it when it happens. My only fear is leaving the people behind and what they will have to go through if I'm not here. But actually, I don't have a fear of dying. When I was 20 years old, my best friend who and I were two broiler chefs at the Chart House restaurant in Boston, and there were only two of us and only one chef a night. So if I wasn't working, he was working. And he actually on this one day called me up and said, you know, I'm giving my notice tonight. This is my last night at the restaurant. And he went off and he was going to come back to Long Island and go back to school. And he, so he was calling to say goodbye. And that night coming home from work, he was on the highway outside of Boston, and some guy had gotten on the wrong way on the highway at 100 miles an hour and came and head-on collision with him, and it took him out. And of course, immediately, other than being extremely grief-stricken, he was such a close friend, I was also not only grief-stricken, but oh my God, if it was my night to work, I would have been driving on that road. So I've always felt like I've been living on borrowed time since I was 20 years old. And it's a good way to go. You know, I mean, like you say, when you're younger, you don't even think about dying. But when you're younger, you could die just as easily as anybody else in a blink of an eye. So it's a good thing to hold on to your mortality so that you do enjoy the time that you have while you're here.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the key is, as you pointed out, it depends on your belief system. And if you believe that this is temporary and we're going to go to a permanent place afterwards, that does a lot. We know that there's a direct correlation between believing in an afterlife and grief and facing your own mortality. Why, you know, it's logical, right? It'd be less threatening if you believe that you don't die. Of course, there are a lot of studies done by researchers that bear that out.
You know, Bob, you're making me remember that my mom, I know we talk about end-of-life lucidity, which seems to be brief moments, would you agree that the stories you've shared were in a certain time frame close to the death?
I mean, could be a week or two before death, or you know, a day before.
Because for my mom, we didn't know she was that close to the end, but she took a slight turn for the worse, and she was 96 years old. And, you know, her legs were starting to give out and she just seemed a little fuzzier. And we helped her to bed and she just started talking and talking and talking to people who weren't in the room. And I even recorded little bits of it. I mean, she would interrupt and cough and go, oh, it's me. Like we would call, listening in over one side of a phone conversation, approach and say, Mom, are you all right? And she would talk to us as if you put the phone aside to say, yes, dear, I'm fine, and go back to her conversation. And I was writing down some of it, and she's laughing. Oh, you know, the man with the red hair, he was going down the stairs, and just on and on. And this started on a Thursday, and we eventually had her taken to the hospital on a Sunday, where she then had a roommate, a younger woman behind the curtain, who we weren't invading that gal's privacy. But my mom kept that woman awake all night long with her conversations.
Yeah.
And it was actually kind of fun and lovely to see how much she was enjoying her conversations. So I like that.
I mean, for those unfamiliar, you know, Melissa's talking about a phenomenon of terminal lucidity where people that are mentally and physically or, you know, were both incapacitated shortly before their physical death have these, it could last a day, you know, where they just are back to their old selves again. It just can't be explained by science. And nobody knows, you know, how it could happen or why it happens. But, and we feel there's kind of a spirituality about it, you know, like the, it's a last chance for loved ones to remember that person the way that they were or to finish.
And I felt the ones waiting for her, the ones that she was now going to be joining, like they're that close waiting for her to come over and they're catching up before they even have the big reunion.
Right. Well, I mean, along those lines, you know, there was a question, if a person is dying and they have a vision of a loved one who had previously died, how is this contact initiated? You know, so I think the question is like, who finds who? You know, is the dying person summoning, you know, somebody from spirit, or is a loved one in spirit following a conduit, knowing that their loved one is going to physically die, and making that connection happen? What do you think?
I guess we'll all find out when we get there.
I tend to lean towards the latter. In fact, when my mom was diagnosed with leukemia, told she only had weeks to live. During that time period, it was her birthday. So for her birthday, we had a medium come over and read for her. And, of course my dad came through and, he said, "Oh, I'm practicing my dance moves. We're going to have a big party when you get here." And so, yeah, I think the other side knows when you're coming, and it seems to be a universal truth in the dying process that when you cross over, there will be somebody to meet you there.
It happens
a lot.
I agree with you, Tom. I believe that it's so there are these invisible strings that connect, that are always there to connect us with our loved ones. Call them strings, you call them conduits, you could call it light, but we're still always connected. And there's an instinct, you know, that because we, you know, of love, and they know that we're about to cross over, and they find us and they're there to help. You know, I don't think that we're summoning them, because people that have these experiences are quite surprised, you know, like, so, but the person that's visiting from spirit, they're not surprised, they're on a mission. So I agree with you, Tom. I think that the person in spirit is finding us when it's our time.
You know, think it back to that movie Ghost with Patrick Swayze years and years ago. So much of that illustrated my thoughts about crossing over and what that you're confused, that you don't even realize you're not in the physical anymore. But I don't think in that movie they had someone greet him. Do you recall that, Tom?
I don't recall that.
Because that would have been a cool element to have included, but it wasn't the point of the movie, I'm sure, you know.
Yeah, I don't remember either, but I don't remember anything. Let's see, what do we have here? This is kind of going to be a long answer, but we'll make it quick. Sometimes there are certain synchronicities that occur. For example, yesterday I was talking to a friend who says that she often feels something brushing against the side of her face, you know, which she believes, you know, was a loved one. Later that day, she said, "I heard another person talk about this. And then I also watched a TV show at night where the actor was talking about the same thing." So she's saying, well, is this purely a coincidence? A coincidence as opposed to coming from spirit involvement, but there may be another explanation. I mean, it could be spirit organizing this, but we live in a in a universe that where there are certain organizing principles, and sometimes things just come together to form meaning. So I'm open to both possibilities that, and you know, more so than coincidence, that it's either the universe putting things together in an orderly fashion, or we know that spirit can put thoughts in people's heads and organize things in that way as well, right? And so you agree with that assessment?
Well, you actually, I have to, I'll let you elaborate, but for me this afternoon, I felt something on my wrist. And I, you know, when I'm preparing dinner or something, I'm very overly sensitive. Like, I don't want to shed any hair while I'm cooking. And I kept studying my wrist and I kept feeling it, but I couldn't see anything there. So I had a little touch of it today.
Yeah, the flip answer, which you will get from a lot of mediums, is there's no such thing as coincidence. So if you want to go down that road, you can hang your hat on, no, this is something being communicated to you. For me personally, it struck, because that happens to me a lot, that I'll be thinking about something or something will happen to me and, you know, just out of the ordinary. And yes, and then later on I'm watching television or watching a movie and they talk about the very same thing, you know, and then a little while later, the thing comes up again. And by then I'm thinking, well, yeah, this is meaningful. And so where I look at it mathematically is if you have one point, you've got one point. You could put a bunch of angels on the head of it, but nothing. You get 2 points. Well, you have a line. Well, it's pointing somewhere. Well, you get 3 points, and now you got a plane. You got a table, something you can stand on. And that to me is somebody who's more analytical and math oriented as I am, I need more. So I get the three distinct instances that tell me that there's something else going on. I don't know what message is being sought. Maybe that's the only message, that there's more going on in this world than what I find if you're walking down the street every day.
Yeah, well, there's one thing I could tell you for sure. Like, if I'm shopping for coffee online, and the next day I get 14,000 coffee pop up on my thing, that is not spirit, and that is not coincidence.
No, no, that's AI. You're getting AI.
Yeah. Oh, that's so scary, but it's true.
I know. The big brother is watching.
Always.
Yes.
Well, all right, we're almost at the end of our time. I'm going to end it with Claude Swanson's peace prayer. Let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone. Thanks for joining us. See you next time.